The Dodgers are all in. There's no doubt about that. I don't think there's any doubt about the fact that they are still the best team in the NL West, probably the best team in the National League and in the major leagues. What did you think about the Korea series? Did you like what you saw? Let's talk about it. Some of the obvious positives, Mookie Betts was simply fantastic. He had four hits even this morning in the 15-11 loss, and that includes his first home run of the season. As a matter of fact, in the two games, he had six hits and went 6-4-9 in the two games against the Padres. That's simply fantastic. Shohei Ohtani also had a couple of hits in his first game. He also recorded a hit this morning, so he went 3-for-10 on the weekend. That's good. Freddie Freeman, hey, the Dodgers were able to win the first game, even though he did not get a hit, but he did walk twice. So he got on base a couple of times and then got him a base knock, his first base knock of the season in game two this morning in the 15-11 loss. How about James Outman? What'd you think about him? Hey, James is a guy who has been in the 30% range of strikeouts. One of the adjustments that we've all said that he probably needs to make, get that strikeout rate down around 25%. James Outman did not record any hits in these two games in Korea, but he also didn't strike out at all in either game, and he drew two walks in the first game and then a walk in the second game. So he was on base three times, and we saw him go first to third. We saw him go from second to home on a base hit to left field. That speed plays, and as long as he's getting on base and putting the ball in play like he did this weekend, I think, you know, we talk about the process all the time, let the process play out, putting the ball in play, swinging at the right pitches. I think we all have to agree, even though he did not get any hits, he swung at the right pitches, took the right pitches, took his walks, got on base, and created havoc. As a matter of fact, for James Outman, he scored one run in the first game and then scored another run in the second game. So, hey, if your eight-hole can not get hits but still score a run in each game, in other words, if James Outman scores 162 runs this year in the eight hole, the Dodgers won't care what his batting average is. I mean, to an extent, obviously, there's limits to everything. But, hey, the main thing is scoring runs. James Outman got on base, and he did that. How about Gavin Lux? We knew that Gavin Lux was in the lineup for his offense, and in the first game, Gavin Lux did barrel one up, but he went 0-for-5. In the second game, he finally got off that snide and got a couple of hits, looked really good offensively, in my opinion. And then how about his defense? Let's talk about the process. Gavin Lux, I mentioned a couple of times earlier that, hey, yeah, you only have six chances. That's not what you worry about. It just didn't look right, so the Dodgers made the move. So on the flip side of that, not only did Gavin Lux make his plays at second base, he turned two, he made good throws to first base, he looked confident, he looked comfortable, he looked like he is overcoming that hurdle through, like we've talked about many times on this show, through getting reps. How do you get comfortable in the game of baseball? Rep after rep after rep. I think we saw that with Gavin Lux this weekend. So, hey, very proud of him. I thought he played well. If that's the version of James Outman, of course, you want James to get a couple of hits here and there. Let's say that, you know, I think this is probably the bottom line as far as what you're going to get out of your 8-9 hole. Let's say instead of James not getting any hits, he gets two hits over the weekend. And let's say that ball that Gavin Lux barreled up actually becomes a base hit and he gets three hits instead of two. Add three hits to that. Remember, Gavin Lux scored two runs in the second game and James Outman scored one. Of course, he was in the 7-hole. So that's three runs in one game. Outman scored a run in the first game and so did Lux. So between those two, in two games, they scored five runs. So in your 8 and 9 hole, if you can score five, average 2.5 runs generated at the bottom of your lineup, that's going to be a lineup that is going to score a million runs. We've already seen that. We mentioned Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani were simply awesome. I've mentioned this a couple of times too. Will Smith. I really think Will Smith's going to have a great year. It's because he has elite plate discipline. And he is going to be the guy that he's going to have to get pitches to hit because you're going to face Ohtani, Betts, Freeman, Muncy, and all these guys. And Will Smith's not a guy usually that you're going to be able to pitch around. So he is going to get pitches in the strike zone. that are very hittable, and we saw what he did this morning with four hits. Four hits for Will Smith, five in total in the first two games. So I think that's going to continue. I think the main concern there is, can Austin Barnes be effective enough to play enough for this team to keep Will Smith fresh enough to stay on top of his offense? Max Muncy, he is Max Muncy. He is what he is. There's going to be good, and there's going to be bad at third base defensively, and the same thing is going to be offensively. But bottom line, he is a run producer. No doubt about that. He drew two walks in the first game, and in the second game, he had two hits. So he was on base four times. I mean, this is a guy that even when he's not getting hits or whatever, he gets on base. So I thought Gavin Lux looked good defensively at second base. I thought his swing looked good. Max Muncy looked exactly like what we think of Max Muncy. And I thought Teoscar Hernandez, looking at his game, it is what he is. I was very encouraged by the fact that he took some pitches and he thought up the middle a couple of times. But Teoscar Hernandez, again, two strikeouts in the first game and then a couple of strikeouts in the second game. We mentioned there is a lot of swing and miss in his game. If you're a Dodgers fan and you're happy about the fact that the Dodgers got Teoscar Hernandez, you have to just live with the strikeouts to a certain extent. They've always been there with him. They're going to continue to be there with him. But no, kind of like Max Muncy, when he does do damage, he can do a whole lot of damage. So how about the pitching? Tyler Glasnow. Glasnow was simply good. I should say he acted like an ace. I'll say that. And what I mean by that is, hey, we know that when an ace takes their ace stuff out to the mound, that they're going to get outs and they're going to dominate. And in the past, they're going to throw a complete game and possibly a no-hitter, right? Nowadays, it's going to be 6-7 innings, something like that. Glasnow did go 5 innings, didn't have his A stuff as far as his curveball. He kept pulling his curveball and didn't get his curveball, which is really a devastating pitch to him because his fastball, man, I'll tell you what, that fastball is just ridiculous. It averaged 96 miles an hour. That's elite. And how about this? The spin on it averaged over 2,400 RPMs, and it touched higher than 2,600 RPMs. So the big deal about that is not only is he 6'8", so which means that he's going to get better extension, which means he's going to be delivering the ball closer to home plate, which means the hitter's going to have less reaction time, right? Not only is that going to be the case, because he has so many RPMs on the ball, so much backspin, that ball is not going to decelerate as much as a lot of other pitchers. So whenever they actually determine miles per hour on the guns nowadays, they determine the fastest velocity that pitch traveled at any point from the hand to the catcher's glove. Well, obviously, that's going to be right out of the hand for most guys. So for guys that have to deliver it like a bruised arc gradual that don't have good extension, they have to throw the ball a bit further. That causes the ball to decelerate as it gets closer to home plate. So that factor alone makes it look slower to a hitter. And then guys who don't have the RPMs, like the 2,600 that Tyler Glasnow is able to hit, let's say that you're around 2,100, 2,200, well, that's going to make that ball decelerate that much more. So Tyler Glasnow has both aspects of that. He has the extension with the 6'8" size, meaning he's closer to home plate, less reaction time for the hitter, and the ball doesn't decelerate because it has so much backspin on it. Because of that, his fastball is absolutely, simply, and totally elite. Whenever he is able to pair that with his curveball, it is just wipeout. Now imagine Tyler Glasnow is able to take a really kind of a top-heavy lineup for the Padres, really good hitters, all-star type hitters at certain parts of their lineup, and not have one of his best pitches available because it just wasn't working that day, and he still grinded out 5 innings and gave up just 2 runs. That is what an ace does for you. When you have maybe your B stuff or your C stuff, or maybe your best pitch hasn't shown up and you have to go to the rest of your arsenal and you still grind it out against a really good team and put yourself in a position to where your team can still win the game, of which the Dodgers did, that is an ace. So from that perspective, I think Dodgers fans have to be very excited about Tyler Glasnow. Also, the first wave of relief, we saw Ryan Brazier, Daniel Hudson. We've been talking about Daniel Hudson for a while, and that slider looked really, really, really good. Joe Kelly, obviously, and his nasty stuff. How about the three pitches in a row that Joe Kelly got outs on consecutive pitches, 1, 2, 3 in a row. That was really cool to watch. And Evan Phillips, they listed that thing as a sweeper, had over 40 inches of vertical break on his, what they were calling a sweeper. It's a slider, call it what you want. But when you have 40 inches of depth, over 40 inches of depth to that pitch, that is not a sweeper, that's a slider. So that first wave of bullpen arms for the Dodgers was very good. So how about game two? Yoshinobu Yamamoto. I've said a couple of times, the one thing I'm probably the most interested in, I don't want to say concerned because I have not, I've said this a couple times now, haven't watched him pitch enough to be concerned about anything. I know the Dodgers pitching staff. I know the people that work with these guys, evaluate them, scout them. If they signed off on this guy, that's all I need to know. So the word concern has not even entered my mind. Curious, interested. My comment on him has been, does he rely on hitters to chase the zone? We know his pitches, his arsenal has a ton of movement to it, right? So it looks here, then it drops there, it moves here, it moves there, and then a hitter can't figure out where that ball is actually going to land when it finishes. So you get a lot of swing and miss on pitches that look like they're going to be strikes, but then break out of the zone. So what happens when major league hitters start identifying tunnel points and spin and identifying after they get a book on him which tunnel points and which spin points actually create balls and strikes for him, and they start not swinging at the balls that end up out of the zone? What happens if he doesn't get the swing and miss out of the zone? Is his in-zone stuff that he's going to have to challenge major league hitters with, is it good enough to get by barrels at the major league level? Now, I understand that he gave up the four runs. I understand that he's struggled in his last couple of outings total. And there could be, if you wanted to, some room for concern there. It's still early. There's a lot of adjustments to make. So as far as Yoshinobu Yamamoto goes, it's a wait and see on him, definitely. But you still have to trust the fact that the Dodgers signed off on him for 12 years. You have to trust the fact that he's been one of the best pitchers in a great league for a long, long time. You have to trust the fact, too, that not only is he adjusting to a new team, a new league, a new set of expectations, of which you can tell just by the way he pitches, he really, really wants to please everybody. That actually is a concern to him and a thought process to him, at least from what I can see with his mannerisms. And then you stack on top of that the difficulty of going to Korea and being in front of an Asian crowd. It would be easy to see why he's not comfortable and not pitching comfortably. And when you, this is why in the playoffs you like those guys with high riding four seams with lots of RPMs that can just rear back and just throw the crap out of it. Because when you have to rely on execution and you're a little bit nervous, or you're a little bit too amped up, or you're a little bit uptight, it makes it harder to execute. So the guys that can just rear back and throw it as straight as they possibly can, right down the middle to the top of the zone and still get swing and miss, those are the guys that have margin for error and usually are the ones that get more comfortable in those types of settings. So if there's any uptightness or uncomfortableness to Yoshinobu Yamamoto, a pitcher that relies on movement, then yeah, that's going to affect performance. So I think definitely it is a, hey, no worries at this point. The Dodgers coaching staff, they know what they're doing. It's the best lab, in my opinion, in baseball, in the world. So, hey, let's move on and let's go forward from there. As far as the bullpen in Game 2, Michael Grove, if he would have had just the one inning outing, like all the pitchers in the first day had, he would have been fine. It's the second inning that got him. Gave up a little bit of weak contact early in the inning, and then hung a couple of pitches later, gave up four runs. That was tough to watch. We've talked about Michael Grove. He's been that guy that at time to time, you just look at him and go, yeah, man, look at that. That's a really nice arm. That's a nice slider. That's a really nice knuckle curve. That's a good fastball that can hit 98. that's really nice. And at other times, you're just like, oh, wow, man, and we just gave up four runs. What just happened right there? So it's just that roller coaster for Michael Grove. And then Kyle Hurd, I thought he looked really good. He pulled a couple. I thought it was interesting that in his last outing, he was a fastball change guy. If you watch the high velo, he even mentioned the best combo for him was fastball change. I found it interesting that if the first pitch that was called was a slider, he pulled it. And I think that kind of got him jarred a little bit. And from that aspect, I think he was not comfortable for a couple of pitches. And then the fastball, he finally got that one. I think it was a 2-0 count when they got the first fastball in the zone. And away we go. He did give up one run in two innings. But I thought you saw a guy that probably was a little bit nervous, wasn't totally comfortable, battled through all that. And all in all, I thought Kyle Hurd did a nice job in that setting. So the rest of it, JP Fireisen, Alex Vesia. Hey, I was very happy to see Gus Varlin get back on the mound and get a couple of outs. That was really nice to see. Gus Varlin has really good stuff. Really, Evan Phillips' type stuff. To me, Gus Varlin has Evan Phillips' type stuff, but with a couple of extra ticks on the fastball. It's the same type of slider. It maybe not quite the accuracy that Evan Phillips has, but the same type of 43 inches of vertical movement on the slider. He can reach as high as 98 with the fastball. So very Evan Phillips' type of stuff. For Gus Varlin, again, it's just a matter of consistency. But again, it's hard to get consistent when you don't get a consistent role and consistent playing time because you're always pressing and feeling like everything is about results. So all in all, I thought the week was just about exactly what you could expect. Some good, some bad. Those are some of the thoughts that I came away with. Let me know what your thoughts are in the comments. Let me know some of the topics that you would like to have discussed either on our Dodgers Dogs live show or on our hot takes, or maybe some of the big prospects you'd like to see in our high velo series, or maybe some of the underrated prospects that you would like to see featured in our launch angle series. So, hey, leave a comment. Let me know what you think. And until next time, go Dodgers.